Isn't that a wonderful sound? The water, the waves lapping up on the shore. And I tell you what, this time of the year is a great time to get out and explore our water waves. The leaves are turning and have turned. The temperatures are going down. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Well, we are talking about kayaking and canoeing with our guest, Darren Bush, chief paddling evangelist, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison. He stops by a few times a year to talk with us about paddling, and certainly can answer your questions about, oh my goodness, pretty much anything, equipment, places to paddle, what's new in the sport. And certainly we'd love to hear from you. Maybe you have a great experience to share of canoeing or kayaking. Maybe you have a question about equipment or how to get started in the sport. Or maybe you want to divulge your favorite spot or place to paddle in Wisconsin. Or maybe a great trip you had this year. All kinds of things we can talk about with Darren, and I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. And Darren Bush, welcome back.
Thank you.
Tell you what do you like about paddling in the fall?
No bugs.
Yeah.
Right? Fewer people.
Yeah.
And the kaleidoscope we get from the trees. It's the fall color seen from the water. You get twice as much color, right? You get it reflected off the water as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the really coolest things about it. The reflections of the trees in the water on a calm day.
Mm-hmm. I was just up north paddling at a place called the Bittersweet State Natural Area.
Mm.
People don't know about it, which is fine. What am I doing? it's a four-lake chain with little portages between them up near Arborvitae. And it's a mixture of hardwoods, there's tamaracks, hardwoods, and pines, so you get all the colors together. It's beautiful.
Oh, man. Well, I'm wondering, we've got everywhere you look. I was down on Lake Monona yesterday early in the morning, and, the water level on Lake Monona, for example, is still pretty darn high compared to normal, and I think the water levels around the state are pretty high. Any effect on paddling?
Depends. It's super regional, obviously. I have a list server on my phone that pings me when water levels are outside of the levels that I like to see them, so I know if something's too high or too low to paddle. And I get them every day now. The Wisconsin River was at 5.5 feet, something like that, at Muscadet the other day. It's usually like 2, 2.5. So all the sandbars are underwater, so there's no camping right now. But there's lots of places that are just fine.
So what should you be concerned about in paddling high water?
Well, first of all, things happen a lot faster than you can process sometimes, and that's true of any moving water. People who switch from, a calm, placid body of water where you're moving at the speed that you're pushing yourself, find themselves in a river and don't realize that they're actually moving, right? And they come around the corner and there's an obstruction and they kind of panic a little bit. Until you've paddled moving water, then you realize, okay, I need to paddle backwards, which makes me go, net zero, right, of speed, and figure out what I'm going to do next. When you have high water, everything happens at an accelerated rate. So it's important to keep an eye on what's going on around you.
Well, Germant in Harrisville has a question for you, so let's just go right there. Hi, thank you very much for calling, Germant.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I'm 85 years old. I love canoeing and kayaking, but I have trouble getting in and out of the canoe. Do you have any suggestions for me, easier ways for me to get in or out of a canoe?
Sure. Well, there's some techniques that make it easier to get in and out. It's kind of hard to describe them auditorially. And it also depends on where. Some steep, muddy banks like Sugar River, the Kickapoo, a little harder to get in and out. But there are some techniques you can use. I think if you just go to YouTube and check out, getting in and out of a canoe, there's probably some videos out there that are pretty good.
Yeah, they're just stabilizing it as you're getting into it.
Right. So, a couple key things are, number one is keep your weight in the center of the boat. And one way to do that when you're getting in is to put as much weight as you can on your hands on the gunnels. Because then if you step to the side with your foot, there's not that much weight on your foot, right? So putting a lot of weight on your hands, on your arms, and pushing down on the boat, then stepping right in the middle of the boat is really what helps. Most people make the mistake of just like standing up. They just step in the middle and the boat goes squirting out away from them. The other thing is, have a friend help. There's no problem with that.
Yeah. Yeah. But I like the idea of the hands.
Yeah. That makes a big difference.
Yeah. That makes, I know that makes, from experience, I know that makes a big difference.
Yeah. There's actually a picture, I think, on my Facebook page of me getting out of a solo canoe at a pretty muddy place up in the Bittersweet. And all my weight's on my hands.
Yeah. So. Yeah. That's it. Well, there's one tip for you, Jermot. Thank you so much for calling. Melissa in Eau Claire, it's your turn. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, thank you. I grew up canoeing, and I haven't done it for years. I have very little experience with kayaking, and I now have a 9 and 10-year-old, and kind of would like to introduce our family, so just me and then my two kids, introduce, either kayaking or canoeing. So just trying to navigate, which route to go, I don't know a lot, but I feel like I've heard, different waters would be better for canoeing versus kayaking and that. So just kind of how to navigate the canoeing versus kayaking.
Yeah, so I would say this. There's advantages and disadvantages to both kinds of craft. Really depends on where you're going. For where you are in your life with a 9 and 10-year-old, you're at the, I call it the pain point. They're mostly ballast. They can help out a little bit, but I think you're better off in a canoe. There are some tricks and techniques you can use to make sure the boat's trim, that is balanced front to back, so that you can handle if there's any wind. That's the biggest problem with canoes is people that don't know how to trim them, right? Set them up so they don't blow all over the place. But I've got more specifics. I've been through this. My kids are now 25 and 30. Mm-hmm. But there was a point where they were, 6 and 11. So it's hard. But they'll grow out of that. And then you have a nice paddling partner.
So do you, what kind of canoe do you look at for? All right, so you're all three of you in one canoe, or are you?
Probably, yeah. In fact, one thing you can do with a smaller canoe, if you have a wider seat, is you can put the kids side by side in the front, right? Because you have a wider spot. If you have a bucket seat, you can't do that. If you have a bench seat, you can. And then they can each paddle on one side, and they're closer to the water, and the boat stays trim.
Oh, so not. And what kind of a length of a canoe would you be using?
Interestingly, the length isn't as important. That's more
okay.
about where you're going and how much stuff you're carrying. Obviously, smaller boats are more maneuverable. Well, not obviously, but smaller boats are more maneuverable. We're seeing a trend towards smaller boats. The 18-footers are kind of starting to fade a little bit because people don't have time to do big vacations. So we're seeing more 16-footers and even smaller because they're lighter, they're easier to carry, and they go down smaller rivers better. But yeah, a little 15 or 16 footer would be fine.
And you can still get one that's wide enough to seat them both side by side?
Yeah, there's a company called Novacraft Canoe. They're out of Ontario, London, Ontario, Canada. And they have, usually their front seats are really wide. You can get two tweens in there pretty easily.
And so, like at your place, you can have people come over and try them out.
Yeah, yeah. This time of year, we're starting to not do test paddle anymore. The water's getting cold.
Yeah.
But they can come in and sit in them and, get some advice. But a lot of us, who has kids there? just a couple of us now. But we've all been through this before, and we know the tricks and the tips.
So there you go, Melissa. Sounds like canoes might work the best for you. What do you think?
Yeah, that sounds good. I was kind of leaning towards that anyway. So thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for calling. Dan in Milwaukee, it's your turn. Hi, Dan.
Good morning.
Morning.
Some years ago, I had a Kevlar canoe, solo canoe, built for me here in Janesville. The whole thing only weighed 29 pounds. It was 15 and a half feet long. and it was designed to be sat in the middle and paddled by one individual. And I went, took it up into Canada and went several hundred miles down the Albany River, which has nothing at all to do with Albany, New York.
Yep.
It flows out of Lake St. Joseph and eventually flows into James Bay. And I am now nudging up against 80 years old, but that was a superlative trip. The whole canoe empty weighed 29 pounds, and it was Kevlar, which is supposed to be stronger than steel. I did smack the hell a good lick one time, but it only cracked it a little bit, right amidships. And anyway, that was a fabulous trip. The upper reaches of the Albany River are five or six really long lakes, like 40 or 50 miles long, and joined to one another by anything from a mile to 20 miles of Whitewater River.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful.
Trip.
Yeah, it sounds like Phil Sigelkow from Black Hawk Canoes built that for you. He was a masterful builder, very, very good at what he did.
The have you canoed that area that Dan's talking about?
I have not. That's I had kids, so now that our kids are gone, I think we might be able to do something. But it's going to be a little couple more years.
And you know what, Dan? We're going to be talking about light boats and what he had. Kevlar. He said he made his boat. His boat was made out of. So we'll talk about Kevlar and lighter boats and a whole lot more with our guest today, Darren Bush, chief paddling evangelist, owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, an outfitter in Madison, but really sells canoes and kayaks sometimes all over the world. Great to have him with us. And certainly we'll look forward to any questions you might have at 1-800-642-1234. Back after the news. Larry Mueller here. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. We need to give a shout out to Ashland and Beloit. They were just named to Canoe and Kayak Magazine's 7 Next Best Paddling Towns in the Upper Midwest. Ashland, of course, that's the perfect base for paddling. Lake Superior's scenic coastline, the Apostle Islands to the north, amazing inland waterways to the south. Beloit has a nature center on Turtle Creek. It's called Nature at the Confluence. It opened last year. So shout out to them and a shout out to you. Do you enjoy paddle sports? You're not alone. Darren Bush, our guest today, he's our guide today. He's the chief paddling evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports in Madison. Taking your questions about canoes and kayaks. So, what questions do you have about paddling? Do you have a favorite waterway to tell us about? Or what do you want to know about shopping end of season for canoes and kayaks, maybe? Give a call at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email your photos and questions to our website, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Before we go to back to the phones, our previous caller mentioned a very light, for in his mind, canoe. It was Kevlar, 20-some pounds.
Yes. The aerospace industry has lent its technology to paddle sports. That's where all this came from.
Yeah.
So you're saying canoes down in the 19-pound range right now, and that is the number one impediment for people paddling, is being able to get the boat, pick it up, and either put it in the water or put it on their car.
Yeah, especially putting it on the car, I think, is almost the worst part.
That is the number one impediment. And so we're seeing lighter boats. We're also seeing people purchase small trailers. And they actually will sometimes leave their boats on their trailer, and then when they want to go, they just hook it up and go.
Yeah, which makes a whole lot of sense to me. Well, Pam in Madison has something for us. Let's go there. Pam, hi. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, or good afternoon. I'm wondering about any options that might be available for me. I've over the last couple of years, I used to canoe and do kayaking, but over the last couple of years, I've lost the use of my legs. And so I'm not able to get myself in and out of a boat anymore. And most of my friends and husbands do not know how to figure out how to help me do that. And I didn't know if there's any kind of lift system or any kind of option available for me or people like me to get in and out where we are unable to do it for ourselves.
Yeah.
Yes, there are. Actually, there's quite a few. And the American Canoe Association actually has a whole program for, they call it, it's for adaptive paddling to work with people. We've had people who are pretty high quads actually end up paddling. There's a company in Minnesota called email me and I'll send it to you. It's Creating Ability. That's it, creatingability.com. It's a friend of mine who's a pretty good engineer, and he figured out how to create seats and outriggers and all sorts of things for people with limited use of their legs. He has a daughter who has a handicap, so that's part of his driving force. Kevin's a great guy, so he could help you. As far as getting in and out, there are dock attachments that are really, really nice that can slide the boat right on, and then you can pull yourself with your arms right down into the water. But there's all sorts of different resources for you. We do have a woman we work with who's trained by the ACA who has taught adaptive paddling classes, and she could probably work with you.
And you're right in Madison, Pam, so that would be a help. And did you say the American Canoe Association?
Yeah, the American Canoe Association. They're based out of Maryland. Mm-hmm. It's the oldest paddling organization in the world. They've been around for over 100 years.
And so they have information on their site. And then the fellow in Minnesota, again?
Yeah, Kevin Carr is his name. And his website is creatingability.com, I think.
Creatingability.
Creatingability, yeah.
Okay, there you go. Pam, I hope that helps. Thank you.
Yeah, and if it doesn't, just come in. I'll help you out.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very much for calling, Pam. Good question. Dwayne in Weston, it's your turn. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi, Larry. So while I was waiting on hold, my mind was funny. Very fond memories of past trips to Canada, just on lakes, fishing in canoes, and moments of my life have been on the water, and most of them were in canoes, and the fish doesn't know what hit them when you're fishing out of the canoe because it's so stealthy. But my wife and son kayak, and in Boy Scouts, we had to learn to get between rear parts to swamp the canoe forward, tip it over to under.
Oh, you know what? You're breaking up, Dwayne. But I think I know your question. Kayaking, you know, what do you do if a kayak capsizes? He knows what to do with a canoe, but what about a kayak?
Sure. So one of the things that I don't think people understand very often, especially even like the Coast Guard, is that all kayaks are not created equally. There's kayaks that are very short and have no internal flotation or very minimal internal flotation in them. And then there's basically long, skinny boats that have bulkheads and are, you know, fairly easy to empty out. So it depends on the kind of boat. If you're in a recreational kind of kayak, what I tell people is never paddle farther from shore than you're willing to swim with your boat, because it's almost impossible to empty them out. There's just not, the water's not displaced, right? So it just depends on the kind of boat. But if you've got two hatches and bulkheads, that's the best situation available. If you've got a canoe out there, you can actually turn the boat upside down, the kayak upside down, and lever it up on the boat and empty it out and then flip it back and climb back in. But there's some technique involved there as well.
But so you're saying, like, the better quality kayaks?
It's not the better quality kayaks. It's a different type of kayak. You don't haul hay in a Porsche, right?
Yeah.
And you don't race a truck. At least I don't. So it's a different style, basically. And the longer touring boats are the ones that have more storage capacity, and that's where they have the bulkheads and the hatches.
There you go, Dwayne. Thank you so much for calling. I'm sorry we couldn't keep you on there, but we lost you. Mary Jo in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Mary Jo.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What's on your mind?
Well, I have friends that kayak, and I have only tried it a couple of times, but I'm interested in buying a kayak. And so I am wondering, what is the best kind of a kayak for a beginning kayaker to purchase, and what price range are we talking?
Okay, so the best kind of kayak is the one that you can pick up and put on your car that you can sit in and you're comfortable. As far as the shape of the hull and all that, that's more dependent on where you're going to paddle and what you're going to carry. So as far as the quality of the boat, I'm more concerned about how it fits your needs. So it would require more of a conversation.
Would you be paddling on like the Madison Lakes, Mary?
Yeah, well, that's just a yes. We'd be paddling on the lakes in Madison, and then like the Yahara River, and you know, some of the little riverways that are around the Madison area.
Sure, you got the Kickapoo and the Washara and all those, mm-hmm. or the Wabasha. Those, yeah, there's those little tiny rivers that are just fun to paddle. Yeah, yeah. So shorter, obviously, would be better. Probably in the 12-foot range. As far as you know, hatches, bulkheads, and all that, I prefer a two-hatch, two-bulkhead boat just because it floats higher if you flip it. Weight, basically, the more something costs, the lighter it is, and vice versa, right? So you buy the lightest boat you choose to afford.
Okay, yeah. And a place like yours, you can go and pick them up and yep. look them, set them down and look at them. And...
Yeah, we got about 90 boats on the floor right now.
Okay. So. Something to look at. Okay, there you go, Mary Jo. Thank you so much for calling. And Michael in Fitchburg, your turn. Oh, we lost you. But Michael has an 11-year-old daughter wondering what's the best craft for three people, including a child. We get seasick. And what's the best way to get around that?
So I think the best craft is a canoe for three people. It's really hard to get a kayak that three people can fit in comfortably. They make them, but they're incredibly expensive. But for most people, a canoe is what you want, especially with the child. As far as being seasick, I've never been seasick in my life.
I haven't either.
And I've been on some nasty stuff. I don't get it. That's a question for your doctor or your pharmacist, frankly. I don't know what to do about it.
There are pills you can take.
Yeah, there's, you know, Dramamine and those kinds of things. But as long as I can see the horizon, I never get seasick.
Yeah, I haven't had that trouble either. Fortunately, I guess for me, and I've been in some pretty tall wave situation, especially in the Caribbean.
Yeah, it was off of Monterey years ago. It was 16-foot swell with 3-foot wind chop coming from 90 degrees. So it was interesting.
Lauren in Madison, your turn. Hi, Lauren.
Hi, good morning. I just started stand-up paddle boarding this summer on the lakes here. And I love it. And I also tried stand-up paddle boarding on rivers out in Arizona and love that too. And was wondering if people are doing that here in Wisconsin and if there are any rivers that you would recommend to try out stand-up paddle boarding on.
Well, I would recommend, first of all, that you use an inflatable board or something shorter and a little more durable, because that is, you know, smaller streams have more obstructions and sometimes shallow areas. But any place you can kayak and any place you can canoe, you can take a paddleboard pretty much. People run whitewater in them now. It's pretty amazing.
So it's not a question of which type of water.
Well, like you know, I'd paddle the Sugar on a stand-up board. You know, that's fine. That's 20, 30 feet wide in most places. It's actually easy to get off of them. You know, you come to an obstruction, you just jump off onto the shore and drag it over. It's probably the easiest thing to drag over an obstruction of all those crafts.
Yeah, so you're pretty much you're not limited, Lauren, by the type of water that you're on, basically, unless it's something really, really small, narrow.
Yeah, yeah. Even then, you can do it. If you can float in it, you can paddle it, you know.
All right, thank you, Lauren. Let's go to Aaron in Sun Prairie. Your turn now. Hi, Aaron.
Hello there. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I have a fishing kayak, and it's got a lot of weight to it because of all my equipment. But because of that, I tend to use a lot of the public ramps, the boat landings. And when I'm coming in, I'm concerned because I'm scraping my keel on the front end of my boat. And I've been looking at some different keel protectors and different manufacturers and things. Most seem to sell it for a boat, a fishing boat or a ski boat, and it's, you know, maybe 4 feet long, $200, and you stick it on there. I've also seen some DIYs on YouTube using a chunk of PVC pipe and heating it. Do you have any thoughts, or do you know of a different product that I should be considering for the front corner of my kayak?
I do. It's actually called Keel Easy, and we've got it at the shop. It's sold by the foot. It's not $200. It's like $4 a foot or $5 a foot, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm-hmm. What it is, actually, no one invented this for kayaks, right? This was an adapted product. When you go to a factory and you see a cement floor with, you know, forklifts running around, there's lines on the floor. When a forklift drives over a line and turns its wheels, it's just going to lift the paint right off, right? So they invented this material. It's a plastic material with a super, super sticky adhesive backing, and they put that down on the factory floor so when a forklift runs over, it doesn't lift. Some smart person figured out that that's a really awesome product to put on boats so that it protects the keel line. So, yeah, it's great stuff.
And what's it called again?
Keel Easy. Keel and then Easy, I think.
Have you heard of them, Aaron?
I had not, but I appreciate the information.
All right. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Jim in St. Croix Falls, let's give you a chance now. Hi, Jim.
Hi. My question is trimming a loaded touring canoe. Any devices you can recommend or... side to side's not too hard because I use a string level, but when it's loaded, you can't use that front to rear.
Yeah, so as far as devices, no, I don't know of any. What we do at the shop, if someone wants to paddle a boat and they're a large person and the person they're paddling with is a smaller person, we'll just take a 30-liter dry bag and fill it with water. And, you know, water weighs 2.2 pounds per liter. So I got a 60-pound weight, more or less, right? And drop that in the front of the boat to drop the bow down a little bit. So that's one thing you can do if you're just going out for the day. As far as trimming it, what some people do is put their boat in the water, and they'll get a grease pencil, and they'll go down, and they'll mark a little mark where the water lines are. And then they'll add space to that. So when you put your boat in the water, you can look at it and tell if you're trim or not. The other thing is some boats have a bottom paint, like a water line. They'll paint underneath the water line, so when you put the boat on the water, you can see mm-hmm. immediately if it's trim or not, or your friends can see if it's trim or not.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So a couple different ways, including even a magic marker.
Yep. I use a grease pencil because then I can go back and use something else, keel tape, or I'll even paint it sometimes.
There you go, Jim. Thank you so much. Susie in New Berlin, your turn. Hi, Susie.
Hi. I was just calling about the woman who was looking for places to go paddleboarding.
Yeah.
A lot of people paddleboard on the Milwaukee River, right into downtown Milwaukee. I don't know if anybody goes out on the lake. I wouldn't. But the Milwaukee River, like in Cedarburg, is a smaller river. And then as you get into Milwaukee, it keeps getting wider and wider. And now that it's clean and safe, it's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of things to do on the river. You can stop, have lunch, go get a drink, only one, while you're on the water, that kind of thing. And I'm quite sure they even rent paddle boats at the park. And all of a sudden I'm blanking on what the name of the park is. Across from the Marcus Center, they rent all kinds of boats, kayaks, canoes, and I'm pretty sure they do paddleboards there now, too.
Yeah,
so,
they do.
Yeah, the one thing you have to be careful with Milwaukee River is, depending on where you want to go, there are locks. So then you have to find out how to handle those. But it's not, it doesn't stop you from doing it.
that's a fairly new outfitter there. They've been there a couple of years, I think, maybe three. But yeah, the Milwaukee is a great example of turning their faces toward the river again. You know, most rivers, you know, in the early 20th century were seen as, you know, basically a way to get rid of waste. And, you know, when you go along the rivers in some of the urban rivers, you'll see just the back of a factory, you know, and what a waste, right? You're seeing cities, San Antonio is probably a really great good example of that is the Riverwalk. So they're starting to see the river as an asset, not as a liability. And Milwaukee certainly has done a good job of that.
And just thinking, on Wednesday I'm going to be doing a show on Milwaukee and some of the great parks there. There's a new book out, and we'll be, and the name of the book is just suddenly escaping me, but we'll be talking about, they've done some amazing things down there with their nature centers.
When people take pride and ownership in their community, you start to see things like this, and that urban paddling gets a bad rap sometimes. It's like, oh, who wants to paddle there? I want to be out on the woods where the birds are singing and all that. It's like, yeah, that's great, but you can't drive 4 hours up north every time you want to go out for a paddle. And, you know, I've been through Chicago. It's like paddling through the Grand Canyon, except the canyons are made out of, you know.
Pretty cool.
But it's really cool, and you see architecture you wouldn't normally see.
Yeah. Susie, that's a great suggestion. Thank you so much for calling. Peter sent us a photo of he and his fiance just returned from a week-long kayak and camping trip on the Turtle Flambeau Flowage, which is one of my favorite spots. It was cold but incredibly beautiful this time of the year. They'd been planning on the lower Wisconsin River, but the high levels caused them to turn northward.
And
so
there you go. I was up there the same time as you, and you got snowed on too, huh? It's like, hey, those are fat drops.
Well, we got a little snow right here in southern Wisconsin too, in Madison on Saturday. Well, when winter sets in, you know, the water gets a little hard in nature, and you can't. What do you do to store your gear until spring?
Well, first of all, I put it away clean, because it just makes the gear happy, and then when you get it out in the spring, you're just ready to go. So, you know, taking your boat, cleaning it up, getting the scum off of it, and, you know, waxing it if it's a boat that can be waxed. You know, just a good UV inhibitor wax. If it's plastic, clean it real well and wipe it down with a good UV inhibitor like UV Tech. And then paddles is a good time to sand and varnish. This is varnishing time, so. Time to get out my 20-something paddles and lay them a lot on the driveway.
And get going on them. Well, and you've got, right now, you guys are already planning for your big event in spring.
For Kuniokopia, yeah. I'm going back from this and working on the floor plan. We're already working on that, and people are already signing up and getting them all set up, and it's gonna be epic again. We've got
Kuniokopia always comes.
It's the second full weekend in March, so I don't even know the dates. I think,
but it's the second full weekend.
Yeah, it's like 9th, 10th, and 11th, or
something
8th,
like
9th,
that.
10th. Yeah.
So. Well, Darren, it's always a pleasure to have you come by, and we'll look forward to your next visit. Thank you so much.
Great, I'll come back and talk about snowshoes.
Oh, that's another thing to talk about with Darren. He makes them. Made a lot of them, some really beautiful ones. Darren Bush, chief paddling evangelist and owner of Rutabaga Paddle Sports, an outfitter in Madison. Always great to have him come by. And he'll be back. We'll do it again. Tomorrow at 11, we'll find out what CBD oil can do for dogs. It's a liquid extract from the hemp plant, so maybe it can help your pet with stress, anxiety, or aches and pains. We'll find out about that when we talk with a veterinarian about CBD oil, and she'll answer your other pet health-related questions as well. Thanks so much for joining us today, and please stay with us. There's lots more in store here on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.